What's up, guys? Welcome to the Road Podcast, the podcast where we talk about overall well-being, health, and all the crazy things that happen on this road that we call life. I'm your host, Jonathan Shane.
Yo, what's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Road Podcast. So today, our guest is Michelle Hearn. Michelle is a well-known runner. She is a registered dietitian. She is an amazing human being. I love everything about her. I love her running career. I love her story. I love her nutrition story. She just shares so much passion. And one thing I think is really unique here is, I brought up the running first because it's kind of the thing that we have in common. But really, what really stands out to me about Michelle is her care for the medical establishment in terms of the nutrition they feed patients. And you'll hear a lot about that in the story, but I really love her heart for people. I love her heart for the truth. I love her heart for health. And I think especially in a world where registered dietitians tend to be catered to have a certain line of thinking, to see her step outside of the box and say, wait, something seems off, I think is super empowering. So I hope you get a lot out of this podcast, both as her being a woman, but also her being a runner, but also her being everything else that she is, because she's a beast. And without further ado, here's the podcast.
And welcome back to the Road Podcast, guys. I'm here with special guest Michelle Hearn. Michelle, somebody I met a couple years ago. She is a fantastic athlete, author, and just overall amazing person. She runs crazy miles. Her first 50 miles, she got first place, which is wild. She's ran 100K. She's ran multiple marathons, qualified for Boston, all the craziness. She is a registered dietitian. She is focused on animal-based eating, high-protein eating, high-fat, low-carb eating. She's trying to make huge impacts in the world. I'm just really excited to have her on, hear her story, and share it with y'all. How you doing today, Michelle?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for the introduction, for having me on.
Absolutely. There's a long list. I mean, you're kind of building this list. It's going to take me like 5 minutes the longer we go. So tell the people that don't know you, that are in my audience, a little bit about who you are. Like what brought you to this place? Who is Michelle?
Yeah. So I'll try to give you the Reader's Digest version. So my health journey really began when I was 12 years old. When I was 12, I was diagnosed with anorexia nervosa. I was about 5 feet tall and 57.5 pounds. So really, really, underweight, immediately put into inpatient hospitalization, was on a 24-hour tube feeding for over a month. Pretty grim situation. Actually was given only a 10% chance to survive. And, I did become weight restored. But when I was in treatment, I was told, as a 12-year-old, you are probably going to suffer with this the rest of your life. You're going to have eating disorder thoughts, racing thoughts around food, severe anxiety. You're probably going to have, GI issues. And so I remember even back then thinking oh my goodness, I'm going to have to become a very high functioning person with an eating disorder. And I did, throughout high school and college, I ended up becoming an athlete. I ran cross country and track. And, unfortunately, because I had a history of low bone density, I actually got a stress fracture my sophomore year of college. So I didn't finish out my running eligibility. I came home, but I knew nutrition was powerful. I had obviously gone from being very underweight to an abnormal weight. But I still experienced just severe anxiety. I would have panic attacks and I just thought oh my gosh, this is, I was on multiple prescription medications. I decided I wanted to become a dietitian because I thought maybe if I can learn more about nutrition and the human body and metabolism, not only can I, learn what's going on with myself, but maybe I can help others. Unfortunately, eating disorders, anorexia specifically, has the highest mortality of any psychiatric disorder, meaning more people will die of anorexia than bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, also all eating disorders, binge eating disorder, bulimia, and anorexia have an incredibly high relapse rate. Over 50% of people relapse. And I'd argue it's more than that. Most people I've known have struggled. And even if you don't quote unquote relapse, they define this study, they define relapse as going back into treatment. But most people suffer with, these life altering thoughts, this, worrying about food, obsessing about your image. And so, I went through to become a dietitian, you get your 4-year degree. And then I went through the dietetic internship. But very interestingly, the dietetic internship, I immediately saw things that didn't make sense. You know, for example, we'd have a patient with severe diabetes, you know, let's say type 2 diabetes, had all kinds of unhealing wounds from diabetes. And my preceptor would say, okay, we're going to go teach them how to eat carbohydrates consistently throughout the day. They're going to get 75 grams at breakfast, 30 as a snack, 75 at lunch. And I remember being like, wait a second, can't they not like process carbohydrates? Oh, well, yeah. Well, shouldn't we tell them not to have carbohydrates? And that idea is like, whoa, you know, I was pegged as this like crazy dietetic student, you know, because dietitians, just like most nutrition, anyone getting nutrition education, you know, through our schools, hospitals, jails, elderly care, it's all based off the guidelines, the food pyramid, now the myplate.gov. So that was kind of my first, I remember being like, oh, that doesn't really make sense, but okay, I'm a student and there must be something I don't understand. And then we went into the ICU, and I remember flipping over the tube feeding ingredients, you know, you're being tube fed if you can't, if you're not able to eat. And I was like, oh my gosh, these are the same ingredients that I was fed as a 12-year-old. And I mean, at that time I was 25, so 13 years later, and now I'm almost 40 and it's still the same ingredients. You know, if you're, if you can't eat, it's maltodextrin, corn syrup solids, soy protein, and canola oil. Ew. And so I just proposed questions. I would ask my preceptor like, wow, this seems inflammatory. Is this really the best thing to feed someone who can't eat? Maybe they've been in a traumatic accident or they have cancer. And, oh yeah, it's about calories. Don't worry about it. It's calories in, calories out, you know? So, you know, I became a dietitian and I saw the cycle of sickness and people didn't heal. And as most medical professionals will probably tell you, working in the hospital setting too, you're just given you have so many patients and you have such little time to see them and you have to do so much charting for insurance reimbursement that it's really easy to get burnt out and disgruntled. But, you know, it wasn't really until, 2019, you know, I lost my own health. I was trying to qualify for the Olympic trials and the marathon. And all of a sudden my body stopped recovering. You know, at that point I was a very high carbohydrate athlete. You know, I was running, you know, 60, 70 miles a week, but I was eating probably 350 to 400 grams of carbohydrates a day. And, you know, I ate protein, but, you know, I try to keep pretty lean protein, keep my fat low. I mean, looking back, I'm like, oh my gosh, so many carbohydrates, all of a sudden my body didn't recover. And so, you know, I saw my family doctor, I talked to two sports dietitians, and everybody told me I needed more carbohydrates, more, you know, fruit, more grains. And I did. And as you can imagine, that did not go well. You know, my anxiety went from being bad to paralyzing. I was having just sweats. I was literally breaking out in cold sweats when I was running. But even, you know, I didn't even attribute it. It's like, holy moly, I'm having like, you know, a hypoglycemic crash here. And then finally, you know, I've said on other podcasts, like kind of my come to Jesus moment was I came home one day from work. I had a patient pass away. I covered oncology. So, you know, in the cancer unit, we sometimes have really hard cases, and I fell asleep early. I woke up at like 2 a.m. and it just felt like my body was on fire. Like everything hurt. And I just am standing in the kitchen and I'm like, I do not know what to do. Like every resource I've had has failed me. I am now on multiple prescriptions for anxiety and for pain. I'm taking over the counter things. I'm drinking alcohol. I mean, I'm doing anything I can to not hurt, and it's not working. And so at that moment, I got in my car, you know, drove to 7-Eleven and got 30 pounds of ice and just put it in the bathtub. And I'm sitting in ice, 3 a.m. crying. And that's when, you know, my wife, who was asleep, woke up with all the bang, the ice in the bathtub, you know, came in and was just like, hey, you know what? It's time to like do something different. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, that's it. I'm not running anymore. This is stupid. I'm too old to run. That's kind of how I decided. Like I at that point, and it's interesting, and I would tell anybody, you know, listening to this, oftentimes, you know, when we feel like we're at our absolute lowest, you know, there, of course, you know, in all different addiction groups, they say, you know, hitting rock bottom. But if you had told me at that moment in the ice bath, like, hey, you know what, this is going to be like a pivotal turning moment of your life, I would have been like, F off, you know, like, no way, leave me alone. Everything hurts. But I had the thought, you know, that next day, like, okay, well, if I'm not going to run, then maybe I don't need to eat so many carbs. Like, why don't I try a ketogenic diet? And as a registered dietitian, my entire dietitian career, I've been a dietitian for almost 11 years at that point. I was told that keto was a fad, keto was dangerous, keto was bad for your heart. So I was afraid, you know, but I knew what I was doing was not working. And so that's when I was working at a hospital at the time. You know, I actually have access to clinical trials, but I'd never really had a reason to research keto. We're not allowed to teach it in a hospital setting. It's not, you know, it's not accepted or talked about unless you have epilepsy. And so as I researched it, I kept coming on articles about keto reversing type 2 diabetes. And I'm clicking on all these studies and I'm like, oh my God, you know, and then I'm looking at the ketones fueling the brain and the reduction in anxiety and even a case study with eating disorders. And I'm like, nobody has ever taught me this. And that's kind of like, you know, what led down the rabbit hole of me writing my book and leaving the hospital setting and not only changing my health, but, you know, hopefully being able to advocate this, you know, in, on a policy level. You know, one of my goals is to be a voice to get the nutrition guidelines to look at low carb nutrition.
I love that. I have so many rabbit holes I want to go down. So let's back up.
I'm ready.
Let's start at the beginning. So sure. I want to dive into this a little bit because I feel like in the keto space, a lot of the people that are that influence that advocate for it, they tend to come from more of an overeating, overweight perspective, whereas you have come from kind of the opposite, right? Like, and even like me, like I can't really say that because I had bulimia, but I also had severe binge eating, and so I was heavier set. I was never like anorexic, but I was bulimic. But even then, I still came from a more heavier set background. Whereas you kind of came from, and I feel like, and the reason I bring that up is because I feel like a lot of people in the space, when they think of keto, they associate it with people that need to lose weight. But we don't necessarily see that with your story. You didn't need to lose weight. It was other things going on, mental health, your relationship with food, the pain that you were feeling from the way you were currently eating, a lot of other factors without obesity even being part of the picture that mattered when it came to transitioning to this way of eating.
Yeah, you know, and that's what often a ketogenic diet can get really pigeonholed. You know, it's like, you know, as I was taught as a dietitian, it is only good for epilepsy, like absolutely nothing else. But if you actually look at the research, you know, we now have several clinical trials for mental health, you know, where for anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, and in general, just fueling your body with ketones. Now we know that that has an anti-inflammatory effect on the body. And we're seeing that, of course, with type 2 diabetes, you know, you're certainly stabilizing blood sugar, reducing carbs, that can completely reverse type 2 diabetes. So, but yeah, it's interesting, you know, someone who, you know, I look back on pictures of me actually. So I started following, I actually went full carnivore for like a month before I did more ketogenic, but I have a picture of me in August of 2019. And I ran a half marathon, and the picture is after I actually dropped out. Like I couldn't even finish the half marathon. It's just, you know, once again, pain, fatigue, starting to get like dizzy, blurry. And looking at that picture, like I hate that picture because I can actually see like, and once again, I'm eating so many, you know, lots of calories, lots of carbohydrates, but lack of protein and lack of fat had messed with my hormones. And that picture, my clavicle bone is sticking out. I look very underweight. And now, you know, somebody who, you know, I do ultra running now, so I run more than I do back then. But by being able to, you know, the amount of animal protein and fat that I eat now, not only allows my body to, you know, have stable blood sugar, severe reduction in, or really good reduction in anxiety, but also I have muscle, you know, my body is able to repair, maintain muscle tone. And also, you know, just nobody throughout my dietetics courses and even in my science courses really taught me how important amino acids are when we're talking about precursors to neurotransmitters in the brain. And I mean, it's just a fancy way of saying like your protein needs brain. Your brain needs protein. Your brain needs protein and specific vitamins. Your brain needs folate and B12 and, you know, some of these other cofactors that are in, you know, present and bioavailable in animal-based proteins. I had no idea. Like I had no idea how much better, you know, my symptoms of, you know, mental health, like anxiety, dealing with depression would get by switching to this way of eating.
No, I agree. I think like something I think about often, and I because me and my wife have found a local dairy farm that gives us raw milk. And I tell
Nice.
people, I don't think people realize that a glass of raw dairy gives you almost everything your body needs to create gut serotonin and brain serotonin. Like literally everything you need to create that neurotransmitter, it's in this 8 ounce glass. Like that's
Yeah.
how powerful this stuff is. And we just, and you're right, like in the medical field, we don't talk like that a lot. And it's really interesting, you know, you bring up in dietetics and registered dietitians, because I'm a nutritional therapist. And so, you know, there's a lack of respect towards my credentials. So like I'm just a naysayer. I don't even know what I'm saying. I'm not even really, I have nothing. So there's
Yeah.
all so I agree, like there is that like severe pushback. And I'm really glad that you were willing to stretch yourself and like kind of try something new, you know. And obviously one thing I like though is that you didn't just go off a feel, right? Like it's just science based. Like the things that you like, you looked at the clinical trials and you're like, there's literature right here. Why is no one talking about this literature? And then you applied it. And like it is crazy, isn't it? Like we that people will bring up studies all the time to defend like eating carbohydrates, or but like if you bring up a ketogenic study or a clinical study on fasting or ketones, that's wash. It's a wash. Like put it back. We don't use that. And I find that level of double standard is it's so painful to like actually watch it happen in hospital beds, and as you said, with patients and the way that they're told to eat when they have certain issues. And I just it's crazy.
It really is. And, you know, unfortunately, well, first of all, it was Dr. Eric Westman that first told me that, you know, ketogenic diets are the most studied diet. So people that are like, where's the science? It's not safe. It's like, as far as studying for their safety, their efficacy, and effectiveness, like they actually work, they're safe, they're sustainable. Ketogenic diets have more studies than any other diet out there. Veganism, vegetarianism, low fat, you know, high carb, any of that. So there is so much research. But what it really comes down to is, you know, it's capitalism. It's we when people heal, we lose customers as a healthcare society. You know, if you're going to, I feel like the entire system really would have to be revamped. You know, you'd have to reward people for healing versus reward people for, you know, we make money when people come in and get insulin and have surgeries and have consults and all that other stuff. So the incentive to heal is definitely not there. And then of course you have lots of sponsorship by processed food companies and pharmaceuticals. So yeah, there's a lot of pushback. And then, you know, traditional dietitians are we're taught from the first class we take that everybody needs carbs, 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 sugar in moderation. I was taught sugar addiction doesn't exist. I mean, all these things that oh, and like you were saying, we're taught that anybody who's not a dietitian is a bozo. Like these quote unquote nutritionists and these NTPs can take a hike. Interestingly, most of you guys, you know, that are NTPs and other nutrition experts are so much better because you're not, you know, you're not under this governing board, the Academy of Nutrition that all dietitians are. So you're not being taught by your education system isn't dictated by PepsiCo, you know, or the National Confectioners Association. You know, there was literally just a study released, and I can't believe we had to have a study on this. But the Academy of Nutrition, your governing board of all dietitians, we've known for a while that they're sponsored by Coca-Cola and Pepsi. But the study actually released they're investing their stock report. So they're actually investing, you know, $500,000 into Pepsi stock, into other stocks. So it's like.
That's
The
wild.
conclusion of the study, I feel like my 6-year-old niece could tell you this. The conclusion of the study is nutrition experts should not support ultra-processed companies' stocks. I'm like, oh, no shit. You know, like, I mean, it's amazing we had to have a study tell us that. But to me, that just tells you, like, I mean, stuff that you and I already know. Like, you, if you're going to be a healthy human, you really have to rise above a lot of nutritional nonsense, things that do not make sense. You know, you're going to have to do your own research. You're going to have to an experiment for yourself. You know, now that I have been eating low carb since, you know, October 2019, and I would never go back. The food is amazing. I
Never.
love eating beef and butter. And, you know, we do some vegetables as an athlete. You know, I consume about 100 to 150 grams of carbs a day. I'm as happy and as healthy as I've ever been, you know, so.
No, I love that, and I'm so happy for you. Okay. So when you started the ketogenic diet, how quickly did you notice like a mental shift? Like you talked about, that kind of helped you with like your mental health and stuff. Like, when did you notice that? When did you notice the physical health, the performance shift? Like, when did all that start to happen?
Yeah. So, you know, I had kind of decided at that point I wasn't ever going to run again. So I actually started feeling better within about a week and a half, just physically. Wow. Like, I wasn't in pain, but I kind of associated like, oh, well, I'm not running, you know, first. So, and then of course, like, you know, the first probably like fifth day in, I had like the worst headache of my life. You know, I wasn't taking electrolytes, you know, a newsflash, make sure you're doing electrolytes. And I was coming from such a high carb background, right? So, you know, that shift that happens initially in your body, it's tough. It's a transition. You know, obviously it's temporary, but whew, that was quite the headache. But yeah, it was 3 weeks. I literally remember, this is another vivid memory of like coming home from work. And, you know, my wife's sitting on the couch and she's like, hey, I need you to talk to me. Like, come here. And you're just, you know, like, oh no, like, did I do something? Did someone die? Like, what's it? That's serious. You know, your partner's like waiting for you.
Yeah.
And she took my hand and was like, hey, like, I don't know if I like this way of eating yet, but this is the best your anxiety has been in the 11 years that I've known you. Like,
wow.
Holy. Yeah. And we're like, this is true. Like, I'm calm. I can sleep. What is going on? So for me, the mental health shift was very quick. And I think part of that too, was just, I was consuming so many carbohydrates that I was just constantly riding this blood sugar roller coaster. You know, you'd eat a very high carb breakfast, you feel great. And then, you know, you feel euphoric, then you crash and you feel terrible. You have a snack. It was kind of this up and down all day to where now I wasn't hungry all the time, you know? And also, like we talked about, just finally getting enough, you know, vitamins and minerals to my brain. So that was very quick. And then, you know, when I decided to start training and running again, the first few months were pretty slow, you know, kind of transitioning to being more fat adapted. But now my recovery is so much better. Like, in no universe as a high carb athlete could I have run like 20 to 26 miles, like literally run a marathon. Like, now in my training, I can run a marathon one day and come back and run 20 miles the next day. Like, in no universe would that ever happen as a high carb person. I could barely walk for like a week after running a marathon. So yeah, the recovery is much quicker. And there's different theories on that. You know, I don't think we know exactly why, but as I said earlier, we do think, you know, we know keto, fueling on ketones isn't anti-inflammatory, but, you know, I just also think that so much glucose in your body is just, it's not great when it comes to recovery and fluid balance and all that stuff. So.
No, absolutely. I am. And I'm with you on the recovery thing. You know, the other day, I think it was last weekend, I ran 18 miles and I didn't have anything for Sunday, which is fine because I like taking Sundays off. And I remember waking up though on Sunday and going, dude, I could totally crush another 18 miles right now. Like, I could totally do it.
Nice.
I didn't, but I wanted to, but my point is like, yeah, but I could have. So I agree with you on the recovery, and I definitely want to go down that rabbit hole because I have so many theories. We haven't even gone to that part yet. But I definitely want to get there because I have so many theories on why ketogenic low carb endurance athletes recover the way they do and can perform the way they do. I got really fascinated with it probably about a year ago because it was happening to me and I was like, what is going on? And so I've really decided just to dive in. So I really want to go down that rabbit hole. Okay, so let's talk about, because one thing I want to bring up is you said that you do have 100 to 150 grams of carbs a day. Let's talk about that because I think, I'm going to hold off. I want to go down this rabbit hole, but I want to start it off right. So what made you want to add those back in? Did you start to feel a little decline in recovery or performance with them lower? And you found that that's just a sweet spot. Like, how did that transition happen?
Yeah. And so for, you know, like I said, the first like 30 days when I just said, okay, I want to be low carb. I actually went like full carnivore other than I did have coffee. and you know, I loved how I felt. I felt amazing. And when I decided I wanted to start running again, I was like, okay, can you run, you know, no carb or very, very low carb. And, you know, I didn't really have any, big goals or ambitions at that point. So I was like, well, let's just try it. And I noticed that I could run, pretty easily. Like, I could do very, you know, some short, like 3 to 5 mile easy runs without much of an issue. But then when I decided, like, yeah, I want to run ultras. I want to run really ultra long distances and I'm going to have to be doing some speed workouts. That's when I noticed, like, okay, I am not recovering as well. Like, I feel more tired. and you know, and just like you, I'm sure, I don't think we know exactly why, but I knew, you know, your body, you know, we know there's no essential carbohydrate. You know, you can thrive without carbohydrates. You can get all the glucose you need through gluconeogenesis. Your body can make glucose through, you know, protein or lactate, some other things. But for people who are highly, highly active, you know, there seemed to be a benefit to using carbohydrates strategically, meaning that can I maximize the benefits of being able to utilize fat for fuel? You know, I'm going to be burning fat even at faster paces.
Mm-hmm.
And can I make sure I use carbohydrates to where I'm recovering a little better, I'm feeling a little better on my runs, and just, you know, functioning better throughout the day?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. All right. So I have some theories on this. We can get really nerdy if you want to. We'll go down as far as you want to go. All right. So here are my theories on this, and I want to hear your thoughts.
Okay.
So what I think is happening is I think that a ketogenic athlete obviously is fat adapted and they're using fat as fuel. We know this, right? But we do know at higher intensities and easier intensities for a long duration of time, glycogen is being kind of trickled out of the body. And when you're not racing, so you're not going for like hours and hours on end, you're just doing training, our body, like you said, can do gluconeogenesis and replenish that glycogen. But what I found was your body releases a little bit of cortisol to trigger that gluconeogenesis process because your blood sugar tanks to replenish glycogen. Your body's like, oh crap, this is kind of, you know, let's react to this, which causes the pancreas to release glucagon, all that jazz. And I think that in itself is fine, right? Like if you're just like lifting weights and you're just being like a normal human, that's totally fine. But running itself is also very cortisol sensitive. It's very stressful. And so I think what's happening is because of the stressing of the running and the stressing of training, if you're doing strength training on top of that, and then stress of just everyday life, that constant need for more glycogen than the average human needs because we're training kind of pushes our body over the edge. And we kind of get into this really nasty chronic cortisol cycle. And so what I've been like kind of theorizing in my head is carbohydrates for a fat adapted athlete, we use them differently than if we're not fat adapted. When we're not fat adapted, they're our prominent fuel source. But I find that as a fat adapted athlete, my body uses them more so to keep my glycogen, well, and overall keep my hormones happy. It keeps my cortisol down and keeps my glycogen filled, or helps my body refill so that it doesn't have to stress itself out keeping up with demand. And so it's more of a hormone regulator more so than just an energy source first and foremost.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good way to think about it. I like, you know, the first thing I think about when I think about, you know, glycogen or carbohydrates for athletes is like what you talked about. It doesn't matter if you're a high carbohydrate athlete or a very low carbohydrate athlete. Like all of our goals is to defend muscle glycogen, right? Mm-hmm. We want to, as we're running, you don't want to run out of muscle glycogen. You know, even the leanest humans, like, you know, Kenyan runners, 5% body fat, have plenty of body fat to run. I think it's like 100 marathons back to back. Like we don't run out of stored body fat,
mm-hmm.
but you do run out of carbohydrate. You know, most humans only have about 2000 to 2400 calories of carbohydrate. And most of us have over 100,000 calories of stored body fat. So the whole point, you know, of becoming fat adapted as an athlete is to, even at faster paces, like you're saying, you're pulling more from your fat stores versus your carbohydrate stores. But like you said, yeah, that in general, running is itself, any type of cardio exercise is stressful, is stress inducing, potentially causes the cortisol release. Life in general can cause cortisol release. And I found that if you know, I've had people, you know, message me and say, oh, I want to be a zero carb runner, carnivore runner. And my response is like, I don't think that's a good idea. You know, for the reasons that you said, I think, you know, I think it could be great. Like if you said, hey, I want to do this for 30 days, I'm running twice a week, three times a week, a couple miles, that's no big deal. But if you're training for a marathon or you have some serious goals, like you said, you're putting your body, in my opinion, at risk because you're going to have a lot of stress happening. You're going to, you potentially mess up your hormones. And by utilizing those by having some carbohydrates, you're preventing the cycle that you just talked about. You're preventing that huge cortisol spike. And in my experience, you know, having tried out, I've experimented with a few different things. You know, if I'm pretty low carb, I say drop below like 50 grams, you know, I could go on a run one day and feel great and even come back the next day and feel great. But it's about day three or four.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like you've been hit by a train and it's quick. It's like, I feel great. Holy cow. It's like all of a sudden your body's like, no. And so our goal as athletes is we want to do the like, I feel okay, I feel okay, I feel okay. Not I feel okay, I'm dead. So, and most people can relate to that if they've tried it, you know, really, really low carb, doing some pretty high intensity cardio. And so that's why I don't want people to fear carbohydrates, you know, and sometimes in the low carb space, people get really like anti-carb or anti-plant. And that's not my message at all. You know, I think that most people, you know, even if you're not super active, can tolerate a very small amount of carbohydrates just fine. You know, I like my wife is, she has a busy job, but is not, you know, isn't a runner, and she easily eats like 50 grams of carbs a day and is perfectly fine.
The what a cheater.
Most Americans eat like 300, 400, you know, some of us, some people have that by breakfast with all the sugary things they drink, you know, so. So that's where the issue really lies.
No, I completely agree with that. And the reason I brought that up and I brought you on and I want to have this conversation is one, because I love your story. It's just inspiring, makes me want to go run. But also, the whole point of this is to kind of get people to see that like it's not this black and white, and you have to be willing to like figure out what are your goals, what's your life look like, and then how does that fit into the kind of ketogenic, because everybody can do a form of the ketogenic diet. It's what form is going to work best for you. And it's important, in my opinion, to find that version, because what will happen is if you make it to where it's one way or the highway, people will just give up on a high fat diet completely, and they lose all the benefits they could have reaped if they would have just manipulated other variables just a little bit. Especially with women. And that's the big thing that I've been really harping at lately, is I feel like for women, there's just this lack of sensitivity when it comes to their bodies in general. And then, you know, you being a female and a runner, I'm sure that that topples, because something that I've always done is, talk to my women clients, and I've always compared the way my body responds to endurance sports, kind of like the stress of their cycles, or going through menopause, right? These are long endurance based events that, unfortunately, unlike me, I can just choose to stop running if I didn't want to and go zero carb and be fine. I choose to run, so I include some carbs. Them, unfortunately, they can't just go by uterus, right? Like, they just can't get rid of this, you know, it's kind of there. And so they have to learn how to manage that. And if it's overwhelming them and you know, kind of doing that stress stack that we talked about prior, then including those for some could be extremely beneficial. And it could be the make or break of them having a sustainable ketogenic diet for themselves.
Yeah, I think unfortunately, like you were talking about, there tends to be some very black and white. And sometimes people like really want black and white. And so I think as coaches and nutritional professionals, we need to have and discuss the attitude that you're discussing, that it is just not, it's not black and white. And especially for premenopausal women, women that are still having cycles, women that have periods, you know, you likely are going to benefit from having some carbohydrates around the time of your cycle. It is a very, like you said, it's a stressful time for your body. It's a time when your, you know, body is preparing for reproduction. So in general, you know, you do need some carbohydrates during that time. So people that are like, I'm zero carb, I'm only eating meat and fat, that's it ever. You know, you're potentially setting yourself up to have some issues, in my opinion, you know, and I've seen that play out. That being said, I mean, I know some people who are zero carb and they're totally fine. So I would never, you know, tell somebody who's doing something that's working to stop. But I think if you are doing something and it's not working, you're feeling really exhausted or anxious or having some other issues, it makes sense to explore, you know, potentially adding some carbohydrates back in. And once again, like, this isn't like, okay, now we're just going to go start eating a bag of chips. This is like, okay, hey, we could, what whole food carbohydrates? I always tell people ask me like, what are the best carbohydrates? In my opinion, it's what you like, what you enjoy eating, and what your body tolerates, you know, and obviously whole food carbohydrates. It's not, you know, so it's like, you know, what works for my body may not work for someone else. You know, for my running, we do some like rice, we do some like carrots, we do some other, you know, some berries, some starchy things. You know, somebody might love sweet potatoes, somebody might love white. I don't think it matters that much in the context of a very high, high fat, higher protein diet. You know, I don't really, I think we put a little too much influence, like you said, on this kind of black and white thinking, to where I worry that we're kind of, there's a lot of people, like you said, that'll be like, oh, this doesn't work, and quit. Where if they had just added 25 or 50 grams of carbs, they probably would have been fine.
Absolutely. And as you said, there's people, in fact, there's people that I'm sure that I'm going to have conversations with throughout this that or do exactly that, have zero carbs, and they thrive. And that's my point, mm-hmm. though, is like everybody's different. And I just want to open up this conversation more broadly and saying, hey, like, figure out what works best for you. But realize that if you're eating a standard American diet, you're doing yourself no good services whatsoever.
Yeah. And I think another good message for people to think about is that it can also change and evolve. You know, I think sometimes mm-hmm. if we try a way of eating, like I said, I was fully carnivore for 30 days and it was working so well. And I loved how I felt but then it's like, if it comes to a point where it's not working, like for me specifically, like my goals changed, I was running, you know, then I don't want people to be afraid to change and evolve. You know, just because something worked for you at one point, you might find at some point in your nutrition journey, you need more fat or less carbs or more, whatever that is. You know, and I do believe for me, at least for me, I will always eat like in this context, you know, in this context of higher protein, high fat, like, I guess just never say never, but I would put money on, I'm never going back to a very high carbohydrate diet, but I'm not afraid to evolve. And I encourage everyone not to be either, because you don't want to hold yourself back. You don't want to stay clinging to something that may not be working for you anymore.
No, absolutely. Yeah. It reminds me, cause I know we've talked about this before. Like when I first started running and I wanted to get into running, oh my gosh, it feels like ages ago. It was only like 2 years, but yeah. So many thousands of miles ran. I remember like I wanted to do it zero carb, like super low carb. And the first couple of months it was fine. And then within quickly 8 to 10 weeks. And granted, I think part of that too was I was slowly building up. Whereas, you know, we're already quite the athlete. So I think like my intensity was a bit. So I think if I would have kind of like followed a training plan like you did starting off with your goals, I think I would have felt it sooner. But 8 weeks into it, I just crashed. I started feeling depressed. I was injuring myself. My joints were achy. It was terrible. And it was like, okay, either I need to quit this new adventure or I need to be willing to broaden my mind and open my mind up. And that's when I started to include 50 to 100 grams, to even some days now, 120, 150 grams of carbs, depending on how intense my training is. And boom, it was like these lights went off. And I was like, man, like, there's more to this. Like, our bodies are so, I find it interesting that we live in a world where as people that are trying to educate and inspire, we need to use simple terms for a body that is so complex.
It's true.
Like, it bonkers me. Like we do, like, and I'm going to ask you at the end something, but it's similar to it. It's like, here are the three things you can do to lose weight on keto. And it's like, bro, your body is, I mean, and what's crazy is most of the time for the average person, those simple steps, if they've never done it, work. But it's like generally speaking though, it's like your body is so much more complex than three steps.
It like, is, and in your mind too. But yeah, I mean, sometimes like if you're eating a standard American diet, like that could be really good, just those absolutely. Three steps. But you said one thing I wanted to touch on with running. It's gone. I'll think of it.
Yeah, maybe I'll bring it up. But on your zero carb thing, I remember. So I've been doing carnivore for 14 days now, and I remember the first 4 days I went no carb. I went zero carb. It was like four total carbs every day. It was great. And then day four, I talked about this on a YouTube video. I went to bed, and when I was trying to go to sleep, my ankle joints started throbbing. And I was like, why are they hurting so bad? I feel fine all day. Like, what? And I was like, and the first thing that popped up, now that I know myself, I was like, I haven't had any carbs in like 4 days. I've ran like 30 miles, trained twice, heavy weights. All right. So the next morning I just did like two big spoonfuls of honey, and that night, no more, all my joint pain went away. It was magical. it's just like those little things when you really know yourself, it's just like, it can be so empowering.
Yeah. And like you said, it's so goal dependent. You know, I always tell people like the goal of somebody who is like, you know, myself, it's running, or your running goals or people who are relatively lean and metabolically healthy are very different than someone who's, you know, 100 pounds overweight, type 2 diabetic. Like somebody like that could really benefit from completely eliminating or very, very, very strictly reducing carbohydrates for a set period of time. So there really just isn't a black and white answer. It really is like looking at the whole person.
Absolutely. 1,000%. Okay. All right. Speaking on that, someone's just started, right? You have to give them 5 tips on how to get started on their journey. 5 tips. What are your 5 best tips for somebody to get started?
Well, my number one always is, I tell people before you even do anything, because people are always like, tell me what to eat, tell me how to move, you know, and I was like, okay, first is I want you to sit down and I want you to have some, like, call it radical honesty. Like, I want you to, like, really think about, like, why do you want to do this? You know, because I, you know, at that moment when I was in the ice bath and my life was a mess, like, I kind of thought about that over the next couple days. Like, why do I really want to do this? And this isn't like, you know, I suck. It's not like don't be shitting on yourself. This is just very honest. And I started writing stuff down and I was like, oh, I don't like, I don't, you know, at that point I was like, I don't like my job. I'm being very short and, you know, unhappy with my partner. I'm in pain. Like, just keep it real. Like, what is going on in your life that is going to keep you motivated to change? Like, hey, so whatever that is. So before you do anything else, like get real with yourself. Cause I do think you kind of have to be sold, cause it's just so easy to quit. You know, it's humans. We're just wired for safety. Like, anytime something gets hard, we're like, oh, out, you know? So take some time before you do anything else and just really be honest. Like, why do I want to change? What's going wrong? What are my goals? What are my hopes? And like, just put it out there. It doesn't matter what it is, so the good or the bad. So just, you know, honest with yourself. Then the second one is I highly recommend you buy food. Like, you get some food that you're going to eat. Like, we went and bought a ton of beef. You know, we got a whole, we have now like a small Costco freezer in our basement, like a whole side of beef. And we also got rid of a lot of processed foods. Like, just, this is not serving me, you know? And I'm not someone who really struggles too much. Like, if it's in the house, like, oh my gosh, I'm going to eat it. But it was like, I don't want this around. Like, this is just not good. A lot of people struggle, you know, if there's crap in the house. So I think if you're able to, I know some people say like, oh, my husband, my kids, I can't get rid of it. And I'm not going to get anyone in trouble with anybody, but I do think it's, if nothing else, make sure you have those foods available, have good foods available. So that would be, gosh, that's one and two. I do think, initially, like, I'm not a huge, like, track all your calories or whatever, but I do think journaling can be really good. Like, I've been journaling every day, you know, twice a day. I kind of have like a set thing I follow, and it's super simple, like doing a gratitude, doing quick goals for the day. At the end of the day, it's like, what went well, what didn't, you know, how can I, because it kind of keeps you, because sometimes too, if you have just like a super, you know, terrible workout, awful day, you know, you end your day with like, well, I'm really grateful. Well, you know, today was really tough, but I can always find a couple of things that went well, you know? And if nothing else, my favorite psalm is, you know, let the morning bring me word of your unfailing love, for I have put my trust in you.
Love that.
And I had a preacher man once that I heard, he said, sometimes when everything's wrong, you just need to go to bed. So I think about that sometimes. It's like, hey, you know, I'm going to put my trust in you. The morning's going to be better. So
yeah, I love that.
So yeah, I love that too. I think about that sometimes, like, oh, thank God, I get to go to bed and try again. All right. So gosh, what other two things? I do think having a supportive community is good, because it can be really hard. Like, it can feel isolating. Like, when I first started, I was still working in the hospital. It was me and three other dietitians. And I mean, you know, they're eating, you know, bananas and bagels, and I'm here with my big thing of meat. And I'm like, oh, that's different, you know? So having in a community, like, can just be, you know, oh, I have a few friends on Instagram that I check in with, or I've got somebody on Facebook, you know, somebody that you can talk to, you can ask questions. I was so fortunate in the beginning of my journey, you know, reaching out to people, just, you know, like, hey, you look happy, I'm not happy, tell me what you're doing, or just, you know, asking advice and sharing. So I think that's good. I mean, obviously, if you can get a health coach or somebody else, I think that's fantastic. Yeah, and I feel like the last thing would definitely be, like, no matter what, decide you're going to do this for 30 days, because it's going to be so easy to want to quit, because you're going to feel, especially if you've been eating really crappy, like I was eating so many carbs, like those first few days are not fun. You know, I felt tired, I felt achy, I had a headache. But man, once you get past that, it's amazing. But it's just life, you know, there's, our modern food environment is not set up for success. You know, our modern life environment is not. So by really committing to 30 days, like, hey, I'm going to be eating these foods, and wherever you're at in your fitness journey, you know, I'm going to start every day with a 5-minute walk, whatever it is for you. I think by the end of 30 days, like, I mean, your life would look totally different. I mean, I'm not trying to even like hyperbole here. I really believe that, you know, cause you start to set habits, you start to change how you eat, which is going to change how you feel physically, mentally. So those would be probably, you know, things that I would recommend.
Love it. I think that's a great five things. Michelle, I really, really enjoyed this conversation. I want to get you back on because I know you're on this this protein mission that I want to talk to you about, and I want to talk about protein in general because I've been doing this experiment and I think you would find it fascinating. So
Ooh.
we definitely need to chat about that. But
Sure.
I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. All right. Bye.